Hello, everybody, and welcome back to We've Got Mail and a Harp. My name is William Bibbiani. I'm a critic. Everybody calls me Babs.
My name is Whitney Seibold. I, too, am a critic. For the purposes of this particular podcast, you may call me Rockmeister McCool.
Yes.
You needn't, but you may.
I say take the opportunity when it arises. Yeah, this is our letters show. This is our podcast where we have all of our listeners write in if they so choose. And we read your emails or your letters if you choose to send them in the old snaily, maily way. Our email address is letters@criticallyacclaimed.net. Whitney, what is our P.O. box? I can never remember it.
You can actually write us a physical letter. Write it to the Critically Acclaimed Network, P.O. Box 641565, Los Angeles, California, 90064.
Yeah.
Write in today and get a free plant.
No, that is not binding. That is not binding.
No.
No.
Limited supply. While supplies last.
We have no
supplies. Oh, we're out. Oh, well.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you, everybody, for joining us. Looking forward to reading your letters. In case you're wondering, yeah, it has been a weird week. We haven't put out as many podcasts as we'd like this week. It's just been really, really rough over here for a variety of reasons. We apologize for that, but we're very, very eager to sit down and just chat with you in this particular way and hear what's on your mind and answer your questions.
A little bit of a kibitz, a little bit of a chin wag.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're looking forward to getting back on track, hopefully next week. But for now, let's just sit down and enjoy each other's company. Whitney, what is our first email?
Our first email comes from Lord Laxton.
Ooh.
Enjoy the company.
Fancy.
Lord Laxton. Greetings due of extraordinary gentlemen. As always, a heartfelt thank you for the wonderful entertainment that your shows provide me with every week. In regards to your most recent letters episode, I have something that is not a correction so much as it is an addendum. On the show, Bibbs proclaimed the atomic lab with real uranium as the single most irresponsible thing marketed to children.
Yes.
While that is probably true, I suggest another strong contender for the title. It would be Live Monkeys.
Oh.
I remember seeing these ads in magazines. You read that correctly. From the 1950s to the 1970s, kids could buy a real squirrel monkey from an ad in a comic book. The animal was shipped in a container the size of a shoebox, which led many of the creatures arriving at their new home in a rather agitated state.
Well, yeah.
Truly fun for the whole family. Yeah, if they survived
Jesus.
It all. Just shoving monkeys in the mail. That kind of monkey, a little squirrel monkey. Those are the ones with the white faces. They're like...
Yeah, they're from the movie Outbreak.
Very small and kind of cute. Yeah,
yeah, well, very cute, yeah.
On a more cinematic note, I was wondering if you could give your thoughts on the current state of film criticism and discussion. Oh, well, that's a big question. What is your opinion of the world situation today?
I'm for it.
No, sir, I don't like it. While I think that social media has allowed a much more diverse range of voices to be heard, which is always a good thing, it has also led to a proliferation of fanboys and others who post uninformed clickbait opinions. Best wishes, Lord Laxton. Pronounced in an excited whisper, a la Darren Aronofsky's mother, Lord Laxton. And Lord Laxton provided a picture of one of these monkey ads that you can see in the letter.
I think it's true that to this day you can still mail chickens.
Yeah, oh, like, is that,
I
like,
think legally
legal,
you're allowed to
like,
mail
that's
poultry.
The one mailable animal.
Yeah, I think it's like has to whatever reason.
I know there's a lot of laws about mailing like insects,
yeah.
And, you know, things that might get out and infest.
Well, that could mess with an ecosystem.
Exactly.
Yeah, you don't want to just throw animals everywhere willy-nilly. You can ruin a whole continent that way.
Well, wasn't there some big long gag on The Simpsons like, "Oh, well these lizards are everywhere, but we'll just hire all these cats. Well, what about the cats? Well, we'll just hire these pumas. Well, what about the pumas? Hire these pandas. Okay, well, what about the pandas? Oh, they'll just freeze to death when the winter comes."
Yeah. So anyway, I hadn't heard about those monkeys. Thank you for letting me know about those monkeys, even though I'm actually very sad to hear about those monkeys. That doesn't sound like a good position for anybody.
So
but,
many... Can you imagine being the poor mail carrier having to carry what you know is a dead monkey up to somebody's doorstep?
Jesus, that's so sad. Can you imagine being just working in that building, just waiting for someone to like get their like Marvel fanfare comic and chop it up so it's worthless now and send off like, "Okay, well, finally we got one of these things and there's $5. Get one of the monkeys."
And it's just a big vat, and they have a big scoop, and they just scoop out.
Well, they have one of those
claw monkeys.
Machines, like in the.
It's just a claw machine full of live monkeys.
But it's a surreal image, but seriously, that's probably horrible. Horrible for the monkeys.
Absolutely, it was horrible.
It's really, really
that
just sad.
That was fun for kids back in the 50s.
That's what we had instead of fun.
What passed for fun.
We had horror instead of fun. Regarding the state of film criticism. it's kind of a big topic. The state of film criticism is perpetually in some sort of flux, I find. But it all depends on which facet you're looking at. From the perspective of someone who works as a film critic, there's some good news in that there's actually there's a lot more diversity. There's a lot more voices being heard, published, finding an audience, and that is a good thing. That is long, 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 long overdue. That part is amazing. The downside is that there's less paid work to go around than ever before.
Yeah, that's an issue.
And that sucks because to do the job of a film critic, not just like once in a while, not like write one article a month, but to actually like write enough to like make your stamp and to like build your voice and find your audience and be able to speak on enough films and genres and other incidents occurring within the industry to the extent that you can build your name and become a prominent voice consistently is really, really difficult because it takes time. It takes physical time to watch these movies, build up an sense of expertise, write the material, make the videos. If you're doing like online, if you're doing like YouTube videos or a podcast, that takes more time. To not having any sort of reliable, reasonable income for what is a lot of work if you're doing it right, or at least if you're doing it enough, is really, really difficult, especially the older you get.
Yeah.
The more bills pay up, the more you have family responsibilities. It's just really, really hard, and it's very, very difficult to have people who can actually dedicate that time, and that sucks. That really, really sucks.
Yeah, the idea of finding a professional film critic is a very rare thing indeed. And we're lucky to know a lot of professional film critics who are sort of advancing the word all the time. And, you know, are people who are far more talented than me, I can say that.
Well, I don't know about that. But regardless, there's a lot of incredibly talented people. And a lot of them still have side hustles.
Absolutely.
I know a lot of people who, like, my bills aren't getting exclusively paid through this. We have a soap store, which I'm very, very proud of, Salt Cat Soap. On Twitter, Instagram. It's an Etsy store. We make soap. It doesn't pay all the bills, but it's people have been really, really eager to support it so far, and that's really, really great. But still, it's really hard.
Yeah, this was happening. I remember Roger Ebert writing about this. This is how long this has been going on, the sort of flux of film criticism, how film writing as an activity has gone way, way up and film writing as a profession has gone way, way down.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of websites that will happily explore young writers for free or pay them peanuts on the dollar just so they'll have something to fill their coffers. And then as soon as they ask for more, they just fire them and find somebody else new.
Yeah, because they can't afford. And I get it, because honestly, there's a lot of really good publications out there, wonderful people working for them. They're not making enough money to pay that, even if they want to, a lot of them.
Yeah.
Some of them do, and they're not, and that sucks. But, like, a lot of them, just the money isn't there right now. And, like, it's hard to be able to budget for a staff. You might be able to pay one or two people enough to do this and nothing else, but it's really hard.
Yeah, and the issue with sort of certain the kind of criticism or just film opinion that you hear on social media is, you know, we've talked about this a lot, how your social media is curated for you. They're actually designed to get you to react, and outrage is a great way to get you to react. So if you react to something outrageous, the algorithm will start feeding you more of that. So it turns out what you're seeing, all of these bad opinions, are curated for you. Those are being pushed.
If you interacted with those, if you clicked on those, if you hit like in any of those, you get more of them. You're not seeing this like neutral, this is just everything that's happening on Twitter right now. This is everything happening on Facebook. It's not about that. These decisions are made by algorithms, and they're not made by people. So that sucks.
So if you're seeing all of these negative opinions, it's because you got really pissed off one day and you interacted with it, and wouldn't you know it, you set off the artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
And now that's what it thinks you want, is to see more of it. So, and people mistake that for reality. They think that is a consensus opinion, all of these bad opinions.
Or potentially all of these good opinions.
If you're
in like a really particular fandom where you like every single thing about, I don't know, Zack Snyder's corner of the DCEU, or you like every single thing about even something I might support, like The Matrix, you're mostly going to get that kind of lopsided positivity. And you're still not necessarily getting a full critical picture. And that part stinks. Regarding the actual quality of the work, there's quality work being written and produced and edited together and podcasts being made. Not even ours, just ignore that. Like, there's quality work being done everywhere all the time. But as with everything, and this is true with movies and music and food and whatever, just because you're good doesn't mean you're the popular one right now.
Right.
There's a lot of amazing things that never quite find a gigantic audience. Maybe they make do with a niche audience. Maybe they go belly up because they just couldn't quite find enough of an audience to make it work. And that's one of the things that we have critics for, is to help find those good things. And because not everyone has the time to watch everything or read everything or watch every video or listen to every album to try to find what's good. That's a full-time job in and of itself. There's so much media right now, which is why it's good that we have all of these voices. And it's bad that they're not getting adequately compensated for the amount of work that they do. I would argue that one of the issues that arises with this particular, and this is something that we've been dealing with since I think the internet really exploded in the entertainment media. Anyone can do it. Not everyone necessarily has built up a significant expertise. And that's fair to say that everyone's on a different level with that journey. You don't need to be an expert necessarily to have a valid opinion or something interesting to say. But there is a frustrating amount I see sometimes. This is on a downside. There is sometimes a frustrating lack of curiosity about film history or maybe looking at the things that we tend to focus on constantly, your Star Warses, your Marvels, whatever, through different lenses. I think that's something that's really there's a narrow focus that I think is not helping anybody. And I think it is contributing to a lot of film history, just to keep it on film, being ignored or overlooked. Which makes it harder to find that because, again, algorithms. People aren't looking for it.
The more people talk about it, the more companies look at those numbers and think that's what people want to see and just give them more of it. So, you know,
which is why it's really valuable for film critics to spend time doing that, because every single click, every single article that gets published like that helps keep it in the conversation. We're helping to keep things alive in the conversation.
I saw an article recently. It was celebrating the anniversary of the movie Blade 2. It was directed by Guillermo del Toro. To my eye, not a particularly interesting movie. It has some fun, gory monster stuff.
Fantastic monster effects. Some cool
otherwise
fights.
Bad script, not interesting, really.
I used to prefer it to Blade 1 just because of the gore and the fight sequences, but nowadays it's actually flipped. The Blade, I think, is a stronger film. They're both better than Blade Trinity.
That's for sure.
Yes. Blade Trinity is not a good film.
On that, we can agree. But Blade 2 came out at that time you were talking about, when sort of film discourse really started to explode across the internet. And the first time, the first people to really sort of rush in and fill that space were the nerds and the enthusiasts.
A lot of them,
So it's been said that shows like The X-Files and Mystery Science Theater 3000 kind of kept the internet afloat. In addition to pornography. You look at a lot of the voices from those, those early days, those wild days of the wild frontier of the early internet. And it's all nerds just trying to be funny and attract you with, like, shock humor.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
That was really hip at the time. And you can call it irresponsible or bad. A lot of it really was.
I think at the very least we can say it's immature.
I stumbled upon a review written by, of all people, Harry Knowles.
Oh, I remember him. The Harry Knowles' review of Blade 2 was legendary even at the time. In terms of pure tastelessness.
It is, like, aggressively crass. By design. He wanted it to be aggressively
crass. He was trying to, like, you know,
compliment the movie, but be as gross as he could about it. He was trying to be really sexual about it.
He was trying to capture attention for his website. That's what shock humor is all about. You're getting people's attention. That's the idea.
And that was sort of the hip form of comedy at the time as well. A lot of the shock humor.
That review was just prurient grossness.
It's really, really
unprofessional.
Sick.
I do not recommend writing that way at all. It's one thing to find your voice. It's like, dude, that some edit. This is why we need editors to say, hey, don't ever do that. That's not helping anybody.
And unfortunately, that kind of set a precedent, I think, for online film discourse, where nerds who were trying to be funny were setting the tone for what film criticism was going to be for the next decade.
Yeah.
And that is where a lot of film criticism still is. There's a lot of, like, criticism comedy, which I wrote an article about recently.
Yeah.
And just sort of the nerd-heavy stuff, the things that, you know, comic book nerds and geeks and Star Wars people were interested in. It's been that way ever since.
Yeah, there's this very direct intersection between comedy and film criticism, where the idea of film criticism is used as a delivery system for comedy.
Yeah.
More so, sometimes equally, but usually more so for comedy than criticism.
And comedy is a form of criticism. I'm not decrying comedy by any means, but when people start to confuse the two, that's where the issue came in. And I think that
Is the purpose to be funny or is the purpose to be critical? It can be
my
both.
And my point is that's not a both, recent phenomenon. There's actually a pretty lengthy legacy that we're still seeing in play today.
Hell, look at the Algonquin Roundtable. You look at like Dorothy Parker's like reviews of theater. A lot of those are just more interesting to hear Dorothy Parker talk than it is to hear anything about the damn play.
Was it Dorothy Parker who wrote that really scathing review of Winnie the Pooh?
Oh my God. Read Dorothy Parker's review. If you think critics are mean today, and a lot of people do, you have no idea what it used to be like. Dorothy Parker could destroy something. She didn't destroy Winnie the Pooh, but she could destroy something like completely. And, yeah, read Dorothy Parker's review of Winnie the Pooh. It's great. I can't remember what book she wrote this about.
It's still on the New Yorker website.
Yeah.
It was published on October 12th, 1928.
Yeah. And it's still a masterpiece of mean-spirited criticism.
Yeah.
She wrote, I can't remember what she was writing about. This is not a book to be tossed aside lightly. It should be thrown with great force.
Yes.
Which is one of my favorite criticisms of anything.
Here's a little excerpt from Dorothy Parker. Yeah. "Pom," said Pooh, I put that in to make it more hummy. And that word, hummy, in my darlings, is the first place in the house at Pooh Corner at which Constant Reader flowed up.
Yeah. Her persona as a literary critic was the Constant Reader.
The Constant Reader. Constant Reader flowed up.
Yeah. I think it was Dorothy Parker who said this isn't just terrible, it's fancy terrible with raisins in it, which is also something I quote kind of a lot. I think it was talking about the new movie Morbius, where it was like, this isn't fancy terrible with raisins in it, this is just terrible.
It's just terrible.
Like, I would fancy terrible with raisins would have been much preferable to what we got.
This is just plain.
This
terrible.
Is pretty plain, yeah. Anyway. Which is not to say that, which is, again, a lot of people like have an issue. I think one of the issues that's weird that's popping up now is this anti-criticism wave of criticism, where being critical, we're talking about negativity.
Is in some way considered... people enjoy things school of thought.
Maybe. I feel like there's a certain amount of, like, life is hard, people are working really hard to make these things. Being negative about it isn't helping anything. But I don't think being purely positive about it is helping either, and I think that's a conversation we need to have a bit more nuance on, because I think some people are like, yeah, I'm not even going to review it if it's negative. And I'm like, well, then you're not helping anything. You're not having a conversation. We're not talking about what's actually happening in the art form right now.
Yeah, I was about to say, helping in what way? If you're writing a negative review about a bad thing, that is most certainly helping.
We want the medium to evolve, right? We want the medium to improve. If there are negative trends,
where errors are being made.
If there are negative trends out there, things that are making movies worse, either in practice, in terms of practical, in terms of just technical stuff, you know, this recent wave of color processing is making every movie look the same and it's annoying, that kind of thing. Or thematically, there may be actually troubling things going on in the undercurrent of a lot of our films. We need to talk about that. If we don't talk about that, nothing changes. You know? If the wheel is broken but it's not squeaky, it might not get the grease. But anyway, it's a long, long topic. We could, if maybe with a little bit more focus, we could maybe make it a little bit punchier, this conversation. But it's big and sprawling. Suffice it to say, there are good things happening in film criticism right now, and there are things that, you know, we need to grow too. And I think the industry is in a really rough place right now, just in terms of being able to find work, and that sucks. So I really, really hope that the people who really want to do this and have something to contribute are able to stick with it, because it's not easy, and I totally understand why a lot of people leave.
Yeah.
I totally get it. It's not, it's very, very difficult to do this, you know, in a committed way nowadays, so... I appreciate every single person who does, and there's a lot of really wonderful voices out there, and even if there are things you don't like about criticism right now, there always will be. There's a lot of brilliant critics out there. Please seek them out. We should move on.
Here's a letter from Hans. Hello, Hans.
Hi, Hans.
Hey, Bibbs and Whitney. I live about 2 hours outside of Atlanta, and the lost city of Atlanta. And And a couple of months ago, I got into a theater that was showing Drive My Car before it was on HBO Max. Hmm. I loved the movie, by the way, and I may not have sought it out as soon as I did had I not listened to your podcast.
Oh, well, thank you.
Thank you for watching. I love that movie.
That's an honor. Thank you.
Anyway, I just arrived at the theater early, so I decided to just walk around Atlanta for a little bit. On my walk, I happened upon a niche video rental store, and ooh, I was ecstatic. They had a wide variety of well-curated physical media, and it was so exciting to me. One of the things I wanted to pay attention to was what films they had that were unavailable on streaming, mm-hmm, and maybe even difficult to find in physical. My first thought was a film Whitney mentioned on the Letter D episode of The Iron List, that being Peter Jackson's Dead Alive.
Ah.
Dead Alive.
Shoot,
I watched that movie too many times.
Is that hard to find nowadays?
I don't know if it's on streaming. I mean, it's super gory. No, but it is one of the goriest movies ever.
Oh,
made.
Yeah.
Like, by a handy margin.
Yeah, but in an entertaining way, I think.
It's a comedy film.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
To my delight, they had it. So while I was not able to rent it on that trip, I'm planning to make another trip to Atlanta specifically to rent movies at that video store.
That's nice.
Which now finally leads to my question. Sorry about the ridiculous amount of preamble.
That's nothing for us. Don't worry about that.
What are some films that you know are great but have limited availability on streaming and or physical media? I'm hoping to be able to spend a night at a hotel in Atlanta and bring along my Blu-ray player just to watch many of your recommendations as soon as I can. Also, bless you, Whitney, for stumbling through my poor handwriting on my previous letter. Thank you so much, Hans.
That's a great question. I'll tell you one right now that is like, let me double check. Because last I checked, this had been removed from most...
Yeah, thanks to streaming, a lot of that obscure stuff just kind of pops up from time to time.
Well, some of it isn't even obscure. Like, for the movie I was just thinking of, this movie was readily available on streaming until about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And then it just vanished. Alfred Hitchcock's Rebecca.
Oh, it's just gone?
It's just gone. If you look at, there's a website I use all the time. It's reasonably reliable. It's not always 100%, but it's reasonably reliable. Called JustWatch.com.
JustWatch.com.
It is a really indispensable website if you're trying to track down films on streaming services, because it's really quite simple. You type in the name of a movie, or if you're looking for a filmmaker, they'll do that too, or an actor. And they will tell you what services it's currently on. Sometimes there'll be a free service, or like if you have a subscription to this, you'll get it with no extra charge. Mm. Sometimes it's where you can like rent it on Apple or whatever like that. But regardless, here's where you can get it with a click of a button or two.
Yeah.
If it's not on there, it's something kind of horrifying about it. So Rebecca, Alfred Hitchcock's first American movie, won the Academy Award for Best Picture, the only Alfred Hitchcock movie to do so. And a movie which I think it has a few problems, but it's mostly brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
Joan Fontaine gives an all-timer performance in it. Judith Anderson as the wicked Mrs. Danvers is one of the great, great villains of classic Hollywood. Gone. It's just gone.
It's just not there.
I think it's pretty available on like DVD or Blu-ray. You can still get it there, but in terms of streaming, good luck.
Yeah, some films like kind of come and go. I remember, and this was another film that was nominated for Best Picture, and then they put out sort of like a really fancy, crunchy double DVD set, and then come the Blu-ray era, you couldn't really track it down, and it's Master and Commander, The Far Side of the World.
What?
The Peter Weir film. You could not find that. It was just not in rental stores back when rental stores were still like still barely operating. I think it's on HBO now. Or HBO Max. I think HBO Now was the name of an actual channel.
Yeah, HBO Now was back when if you had cable...
HBO Go, HBO Now, HBO Watch Now.
Like, HBO Now is if you had cable and you had HBO, you would get that for like, I think, no additional cost.
And it was
then
it was
HBO
like the first
Go
time
was,
they did it like on demand.
Yeah, and then I think I could be mixing them up, but then HBO Go was if you don't have HBO and cable, you can pay a certain amount just for HBO. Mm-hmm. HBO Max is everything HBO has plus Criterion, plus Warner Brothers, plus Turner Classic Movies. So it's a lot more on HBO. And HBO Max is a better service. None of them have Tales from the Crypt. Really sucks.
Well, that's another one. Tales from the Crypt is out of print. They made some DVDs, but then it's another one of those issues where two different studios own like different aspects of it. Mm-hmm. Like some have the broadcasting rights and some have the characters, something like that. Some have like rights to the original comics that they're based on. And as such, they're still in litigation over this thing. Like who gets, you know, the right amount of money for this sort of thing. And if everybody wants a full share, they can't sell it because it'd be too expensive.
Yeah.
That was the deal with Batman for a long time, the 1966 series. You couldn't find Batman because Warner Brothers owned the character.
But Fox owned the TV show.
Yeah,
that was a real pain
in the ass. And Warner Brothers were in this big push and pull, but they ended up coming up with a deal.
There's a really good Blu-ray available of that.
You can get
And the show is currently on Tubi, so that's not one of them. Mm. Here's one, and this is something that we talk about semi-frequently because the topic keeps coming up. Mm. Movie that is not available on streaming, this film is not yet rated.
No kidding, the Kirby Dick movie.
Yeah, and I'm not shocked because I don't think a lot of people want that thing on streaming, but this film is not yet rated as a 2006 documentary that basically lifts the veil on the very mysterious Motion Picture Association of America, which rates movies on the scale of like G to NC-17, but does so remarkably inconsistently. With like absolutely, with a real, real, real bias against things like queer content.
Yeah, that was a big issue, and Kirby Dick wanted to find something out, so he actually like hired private detectives to follow the ratings board and figure he reenacted like phone calls and learned some weird things about the rules. And one of the things is you can appeal a rating, like if your film is rated NC-17.
Yeah, you can say, hey, wait a minute.
You can say, well, I think this should be an R-rated film. Can I appeal? And you're allowed to make an appeal, but you're not allowed to cite any other examples that they've rated in the
past. You're not allowed to say, here's a movie that has very similar content, very similar tone, same genre, but this one you gave an R, and mine you gave an NC-17, even though the content is obviously negligibly different in terms of graphic nudity or violence or whatever it is.
And they keep on trying to say, oh, the ratings are just sort of a guide for parents, but they failed to acknowledge how seriously so many businesses take those ratings.
Yeah, it theaters prevents you
book NC-17 rated movies.
It prevents you from getting work a lot of these. And like, it's if you watch that thing, and hopefully things have changed. I would love a follow up because it's been over 15 years. But if you watch that movie, you just lose all respect for any respect you might have once had for that rating system. You realize that means nothing. That means nothing.
Well, as somebody who's worked in movie theaters pretty much his whole life, I found that the ratings are kind of meaningless when the enforcers, like the people at the front lines making sure the right people are getting into these movies, are shiftless teenage clerks at a movie theater who really don't give a care.
That's true.
It's like, you know, if you're 14 and you want to see an R-rated movie and you're just sort of like, go up to the teenage clerk, nobody's really paying attention. It was not an issue. The only issue would be if a parent came in and complained. Don't tell your parents, you're good. Just sneak in. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
So that sort of made me lose a lot of mist about the rating system.
A few more films that are currently not available on streaming. Dogma, Kevin Smith's Dogma, which I believe it's my understanding that had something to do with a lot of Kevin Smith's like major films were made under the Miramax banner.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe something like maybe Harvey Weinstein specifically owns the rights to that or something. And like personally, I don't know how true that is, but regardless, they're not readily available, so Dogma isn't available. One of the best movies about movies ever made, Shadow of the Vampire.
That's a weird one.
Shadow of the Vampire, not available.
Weirdly elusive.
I believe didn't it win the Academy Award for Best Makeup?
I think it did.
It was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Willem Dafoe. Yeah. Willem Dafoe was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for playing a vampire. That's rare. The Academy Award acknowledging a horror performance is incredibly rare. That movie is brilliant. Absolutely deserves more of an audience. Doesn't seem to have one.
You know what's not on streaming? Wild at Heart.
Yeah.
The David Lynch movie that won the Palme d'Or at Cannes.
Yeah.
It's really well known.
I keep thinking, you have to imagine that Criterion is trying.
Well, absolutely.
You have to imagine that's got to be a prank because they're putting out David Lynch movies. Like, Near Dark.
Oh, Near Dark.
Catherine Bigelow's Near Dark has occasionally it has popped up. I remember there was a brief period where, let me see, maybe it's still available right now. Mm-hmm. It is Near Dark is actually now available on Shudder, or at least some Shudder, and Mubi. So watch it while you can, because sometimes it just completely vanishes, and it sucks, because that's one of the best vampire movies. I just did an article for The Wrap, where they asked me to highlight the best vampire movies ever made, and I did like the top 23. Yeah. Shadow of the Vampire was like number 24; didn't quite make it. Near Dark sure as hell did.
There are some dark, edgy indie films that just aren't getting like a lot of Greg Araki's movies aren't available.
Yep,
and again, I'm sure the reason why these aren't available is different for every film. So yeah, you can't see Happiness, the Todd Solondz movie.
Oh wow!
Yeah, I'm looking up just like lists online. Yeah,
I'm trying to double check.
Splendor and Nowhere, those are Greg Araki movies. Those are not available. The Doom Generation as well. Not that you necessarily want to, but Larry Clark's Kids.
Oh, here's another vampire movie that was on my list: George Romero's Martin.
Yeah, that one's hard.
Martin is a brilliant horror movie about a guy who thinks he's a vampire, but might not be. And boy, is it creepy.
You can't see Super Mario Brothers.
That cannot be right. I'm looking that one up.
Yeah, look it up. But according to what I'm looking at right here, Super Mario Brothers.
Super Mario Brothers, the movie.
The movie, 1983.
Currently not streaming.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. These are not small films.
No, Even Cowgirls Get the Blues. That's a Gus Van Sant movie. Mm-hmm. PCU, True Lies, a James Cameron action film.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
With Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's one of the biggest movies of all time.
They have been trying to, James Cameron has allegedly been working on, a 4K version of that.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. It's just taking forever. Yeah. It's weirdly unavailable. Yeah, the movie was huge when it came out. Yeah, again, these are not necessarily small films. Some of them aren't necessarily good films, but
I'm noticing a lot of these films I'm looking at on the list I'm seeing is a lot of these are NC-17. Like Henry and Jean is on this list.
A lot of
Greg Araki movies, Kids. Was it Wild Orchid, if you remember that movie? Mm-hmm. That's a softcore smut movie from the late 80s. Mm-hmm. Maybe there is just this sort of aversion to more sexual content.
It might be less in demand. One more and then we'll move on. Here, you want, because we're talking about a lot of mainstream stuff. Here's a weird movie. You want to see a really weird movie that why did you make this? And it's currently not available on streaming. I'm double checking. I'm double checking. Hang on. Bada bing. It is currently not available. Meet the Applegates.
Meet the Applegates is so bad.
I'm not saying it's good.
It is incredibly strange.
Meet the Applegates is a very, very, very... So basically, here's the deal.
It's sort of in the Tim Burton mold, I guess.
Yeah, it's in a very strange Tim Burton kind of Barry Sonnenfeld kind of deal. Directed by Michael Lehman, of all people. But basically, Ed Begley Jr. and Stockard Channing play giant bugs. And these giant bugs are human size.
They can mutate and look like humans.
Yes. Humans are destroying the environment, so these giant bugs have decided to infiltrate suburbia and try to look as normal as possible so that they can prepare for the downfall of the human race by, nuking every power plant on Earth, and only the bugs will survive. However, once they start acting like suburbanites, they start falling into all of the things that suburbanites fall into, things like infidelity, drugs, just juvenile delinquent shit.
The
alcoholism.
The teenage girl gets impregnated by a human boy.
A weird and gross way. It's a very ill-advised film.
Yeah.
It's a lot of really gross, weird, stupid stuff in it. You kind of have to see it to believe it. It used to be on TV all the time. It is not easy to find right now. If you can, I highly recommend it, not because it's good, but because you ain't never seen that shit. If you haven't seen Meet the Applegates, you haven't seen a film kind of like it.
I saw a film called Meet the Hollowheads, which is really similar. It has John Glover.
There are other films that are mocking suburbia, but you haven't seen specifically the giant bug family in suburbia. The specifics,
I suppose not.
This isn't exactly the same as everything else. So definitely check that one out.
Yeah, Dead Alive is not on streaming. Heavenly Creatures isn't on streaming either.
That's sad.
What about
Forgotten Silver?
That I don't know.
I'm going to look up Forgotten Silver. Forgotten Silver is, let me see. Forgotten Silver
is... a mockumentary by Peter Jackson.
Yeah, Peter...
The early days of cinema, but rewriting history so that it all happened in New Zealand.
There was this one New Zealand filmmaker in the silent era who did things...
Mackenzie Crawford or something.
Something like that. He allegedly invented things like color cinema or synchronized sound, and all of these things that we now take for granted today are we all know the films that allegedly started these enormous innovations. They all happened in New Zealand, but through unfortunate luck, they never quite found popularity. He went to great lengths to fake historical footage. And it was pretty convincing. There are some people who watch this documentary on TV and he never quite winks at the camera. some people were convinced that it was real. Wow. And it was a point of some national pride. And then it was like, no. Colin McKenzie, I think his name
was. Colin McKenzie.
Yeah. Forgotten Silver is a wonderful.
Crawford McKenzie was Craig Ferguson's character from that movie. What was it? Where he plays the hairdresser.
The Big Tease.
That's a
funny film. Yeah, but anyway, Forgotten Silver is wonderful. It's not currently available on streaming. Please find it. It's great.
I'll recommend a really fun Italian horror movie I saw called Cemetery Man. Available on streaming.
That movie's amazing.
With Rupert Everett as a guy who works in, like, this handsome comic book dude who works in a cemetery where the dead come back occasionally.
Yeah, every time you get buried in that cemetery, like 7 days later or whatever, there's the exact number of days when you come back from the dead. And he's always just there to, like, okay, just shoot him in the head. That's part of the job.
It starts playing out as this really bonkers love story where he falls in love with this girl who might, and another his assistant also falls in love with another girl and she dies and it's waiting for her to come back.
Yeah, it's really weird.
It's incredibly bizarre. It's like an Italian soap opera gory zombie movie. Really, really psychedelic movie. I recommend Cemetery Man. It's pretty sweet.
I agree. All right, we should move on. Hopefully the. I think it's a fair number of suggestions.
Yeah.
Good luck. And seriously, where you find video stores or where you find video rental establishments, there aren't a lot left. Support them when you can.
Days of Being Wild isn't on streaming.
There's always more.
Isn't on streaming.
Yeah. But seriously, support them where you can because they have a limited reach, obviously. And if you don't live in the area, buy a t-shirt, buy a used DVD, something. Support them where you can. We need these places because otherwise a lot of these films will remain unavailable. It sucks.
Yeah.
All right, so moving on.
Here is a letter from Charles. Hello, Charles. Dear Bibbs and Rockmeister McCool, so nearly 2 years ago, I asked your Twitter account for advice regarding a detail in a fantasy short story I was writing. I'm emailing you to let you know that the fantasy story recently appeared in the science fiction and fantasy site Metastellar.
Ooh!
And there's a link here. CQCHOI, CQCHOI.com/kill-your-darlings. The story takes place in California. I asked you for a boring, safe city 1 to 2 hours from Los Angeles, and you suggested Temecula. The story starts off about a woman who takes it upon herself to visit the star of her favorite childhood show and spirals off in some unexpected directions. In addition to appearing in Metastellar, it was also received an honorable mention in the Writers of the Future contest. Normally, I'm just a science journalist by trade, but I've also recently begun writing science fiction and fantasy. My first sci-fi story appeared in Analog Magazine, which once upon a time syndicated the first Dune novel, which I found quite exciting, as you might imagine. Anyway, if you read my story, I hope you enjoy it. P.S. I emailed you about a scene between Data and Pulaski in January. You read my letter, and I'm glad you reconsidered your stance. Big fan of your show for a while now. Cool.
Thank you so much.
I'm glad we could suggest a dumpy town in Southern California.
Oh, and we found one.
Oh, yes.
Temecula's not great. I'm sure if there's anyone listening who's from Temecula, if you like it, cool. I've been there many times. It was not great for me. But, everyone's experience, I guess, is different.
We've joked a lot, because one of the good jokes on the new Star Trek animated show, Star Trek Lower Decks, is they fly around on a California-class ship. It's this rinky-dink little ship. It has very little on it. There's no, like, quarters for the ensigns. They just sort of sleep in a hallway, and they shower in that same hallway. And all of the ships are named after, like, really unimpressive cities in Southern California. It's kind of a joke for California residents. So the main ship is called the USS Cerritos, which, if you know anything about Southern California, is only famous for
having an auto square.
It's where you go to buy cars. Like, there's nothing else.
Cerritos Auto Square! That's the...
Yeah.
So, I forget what it was. Something, South Beach, Cerritos Auto Square!
Oh. I can sing you the Pete Ellis Ford jingle.
Do it.
Pete Ellis Ford, Long Beach Freeway, Firestone Exit, South Gate. 90 Road Freeway, Lakewood Exit, Bellflower. There are two locations. Pete Ellis Ford, here in Southern California. And
no, you won't get a lemon.
I could have bought a lemon at Foster
at
of
Toyota of Orange. These are all local commercials.
Yeah,
these
are local commercials from just from Southern California.
Yeah.
Look up Cal Worthington at some point.
Oh, yeah.
It's Cal Worthington and his dog Spot. You can find, like, local Cal Worthington ads. Those were ubiquitous for people our age in Southern California. Cal Worthington lived to be, like, 95, and he kept on selling cars
right up
to the very end. He got, like, a profile in LA Weekly at one point.
Good for him.
It's like, what's special about him? Well, just the commercials, really. He's just selling used cars. He's not doing anything, you know, particularly impressive about it.
He did it with such pizzazz, that he managed to become something of a local celebrity. Good for him.
Yeah.
Anyway, but thank you for that. And everyone seek out that story. It's called Kill Your Darlings, and it is in Metasteller. In 2022,
Here's a letter from Name Redacted. If you don't sign off, I got no name. So here's a letter. It says, really excited to hear about all of your love for Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh.
That we reviewed that on our most recent.
Well, Whitney did. I still haven't had a chance to see it. Rough week.
I hope you do.
I've had such a long week.
I'm so sorry.
Jesus. Moving on.
I am a big fan of The Daniels, the directors of that film. Swiss Army Man is my favorite movie of the decade and of all time.
Oh, is that them? Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Daniels also did I think they also did like a bunch of shorts, but their only two features are Swiss Army Man and Everything Everywhere All at Once. You and Bibsy Boy owe it to yourselves to watch this masterpiece, and who knows, maybe you'll feel inclined to review it. Here are some other random recommendations. The Toll from 2021. I don't remember The Toll.
No.
Vivarium from 2020. I remember when that one came out, but I did miss it.
Yeah.
Sweetheart from 2019. Mm-hmm. The Void from 2016 is a horror movie.
I remember when that came out, one.
And I also really love Daniel Isn't Real, which we did see. I think we reviewed.
Yeah, I like Daniel Isn't Real a lot. That's a really good one, yeah.
Yeah, that one's on Shudder. Appreciate all your recommendations from you guys. I appreciate all the recommendations from you fellows. Goodbye.
Thank you so much. Oh, and it turns out the Danielses also did the music video for Turn Down for What?
Yeah.
Which is one of the better music videos of the last 10 years. It's really memorable. If you haven't seen it, stop the podcast, watch it. It's a treat. So there you go.
A lot of people smashing through walls and stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's got energy to spare. It's great. Mm. Yeah. Well, thank you for that.
Thank you. Here's a letter from J-Lo. We hear from J-Lo pretty often.
Hi, J-Lo.
Greetings, gents. When Coda... this is about the Academy Awards.
Mm-hmm.
When Coda won Best Adapted Screenplay after winning Best Supporting Actor, I said to myself, oh, Coda will win Best Picture.
Yeah.
And an hour or so later, I was correct. In the last decade, four Best Picture wins won the same or similar categories spaced throughout the night, starting with a Best Supporting Performance, in the middle winning Best Screenplay, and finally closing out the night with Best Picture.
Yeah.
These were the only Oscars these films won. In chronological order, 12 Years a Slave, Supporting Actress, Adapted Screenplay, Picture. Moonlight, Supporting Actor, Adapted Screenplay, Picture.
Yep.
Green Book, Supporting Actor, Original Screenplay, Picture.
Mm-hmm.
And Coda, Supporting Actor, Adapted Screenplay, Picture.
Yep.
Are there conclusions that can be drawn from this pattern? Also, with Ariana DeBose's win, she becomes the third performer to win an Oscar for the same character. You previously had mentioned Brando and De Niro, but forgot Ledger Phoenix for Joker.
Did we forget that? That's weird. I knew that. Okay.
Don't lose that point in the Schmodown.
No, fair enough. Yeah, it's those are the three characters. It's Tina from Anita. Anita, sorry. Anita from West Side Story, which is Rita Moreno and Mariana DeBose. The Joker from The Dark Knight and Joker.
Mm-hmm.
And Vito Corleone from Godfather and Godfather Part 2. Those are the only times they ever won for playing the same character.
I think
nominated has happened a bunch of times.
I think Ariana DeBose and Rita Moreno are an exception, however, because they are literally playing the same character at the same age, at the same time.
Yeah, they're playing. Well, they're in the one's a remake, so they're playing basically the same scenes.
Yeah.
And same music, more or less.
The two Jokers are two different versions of the same character.
True.
They exist in different universes. It's a different kind of performance for each.
I'll let it go, but
Vito Corleone is two different characters, the same character, but at different points in their life.
Yeah.
So they could technically be two different characters.
I think
Moreno and Ariana DeBose are the most similar characters to have won.
I agree. I think the trivia still holds, but I agree that they're definitely the ones who are doing the closest thing to each other. They're it would be like if, two people won for playing Hamlet.
Yeah.
You know, you're playing basically, maybe your lines have been cut in a different way, but basically you're playing the same performance.
Apart from Olivier, who's won for a Shakespeare performance?
Did Maggie Smith win for Othello?
Oh, I don't know.
Let me double check. I think Maggie Smith won for Othello.
Yeah, look that up, because I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I think Olivier won Best Actor for playing Hamlet for his 1948 version.
I'm not 100% on that.
Yeah, look that up, too.
Let's see here. Ba 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 ba.
While you're looking that up, I'll move on to another letter.
Oh, yeah. Vamp for me. Give me a vamp.
Well, I'm trying to think of now just sort of Shakespearean movies that were up for Academy Awards at all, apart from Kenneth Branagh and Laurence Olivier. Oh, I guess A Midsummer Night's Dream in 1935.
Yeah. She was nominated for Othello. She didn't win. Okay. It was her first nomination, though. I'm just not crazy about it. I'm trying to think if anyone actually did win for playing Shakespeare. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe it's seen as like too theatrical.
It's hard to.
And of course, Denzel Washington.
Nominated again, didn't win. You know. I'm always surprised that Kate Winslet didn't get nominated for Hamlet. In my head, she did.
Kate Winslet for Branagh's Hamlet.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's great. I don't know,
everybody's great in that movie.
I know, but for whatever, I think at the time people were saying she would. Like, she seemed like a shoo-in, and then she just wasn't, and it was weird.
I'm surprised that, you know, Shakespearean actors, like Richard Breers, I think is his name, who plays Polonius in that production, and he's great. He could have been nominated for an Academy Award. Mm-hmm. That one should have gotten so much more awards attention, and I think it just didn't because Hamlet was maybe sort of seen as a gimme. It's like, oh, of course it's going to get a lot of awards. It's like one of the most celebrated works of literature
it's
ever
Hamlet.
Written.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, Olivier won for playing Hamlet in 1948.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, you're right. Who did he beat? He beat Lou Ayres for Johnny Belinda, Montgomery Clift for The Search, Dan Daly for When My Baby Smiles at Me, and Clifton Webb for Sitting Pretty. I haven't seen all those movies, but let's be honest here. Olivier is the one whose performance seems to have lasted the longest in the consciousness. So, at least for historical posterity, that makes sense. So, anyway, moving on.
Here's a letter from OK. We've heard from OK in the past. Hi. Question. If I'm writing this in Finland, dear Whitney Seibel is reading out loud, and dear Bibbs is listening, then who's piloting the plane?
No!
Michelle, you got it?
Yeah.
Michelle's got it.
Anyway.
It's nicely done, by the way.
got a thumb up from him. In a recent episode of that great podcast where you got mail, one writer mistakenly called The Worst Person in the World a Swedish film when it actually takes place in Norway and is a Norwegian film by a Norwegian director and spoken in Norwegian.
Whoopsie.
I have also spent many years mispronouncing that director's name. I've pronounced it Joachim.
Yeah.
It's Joachim.
Yeah.
Because he is Norwegian. It is financed by several countries, but I still say it's wrong to say that you get the same thing from Bergman's Swedish films.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's not a big deal for me personally if people mix up similar countries. I do think it might mean more to people from Sweden and Norway. Also, coming from someone from a country as huge and powerful as the United States, it makes it feel a bit more important to correct. That being said, yes, but we are also quite ignorant. We're big and powerful.
Don't forget.
We're big and powerful.
We're also very uneducated.
You know, we're big and powerful, and we don't go to school, and we don't read. And we don't know anything about geography or other countries.
Yeah, that's not great, is it?
No, it's not great.
No.
That's kind of where we are.
Shit.
The U.S. is not great at a lot. That being said, I wanted to emphasize that I'm not trying to call out anyone, but just correct a tiny mistake. Geography is hard, and there are a lot of countries in Europe. Mm-hmm. Oh, I know those countries. I've been to a couple of those countries in Europe. I spent a couple weeks in a town called Vasa in Finland, which is north of Helsinki, because that's the only city anybody knows in Finland is Helsinki. Right. I went in the winter and stayed through the start of spring. And it was really unbelievably dramatic because the family we were staying with, you know, it was bitter cold. We all had our coats on. It was freezing outside. Everything was really, really well insulated. If there was a beam of sunlight in Vasa, you could find people just laying on the ground in it.
Wow.
It was great. Like, they'd just stop on the street and just sort of lay in the sun for a little bit.
Huh.
And one day the family said, okay, we're putting away all the winter stuff. And we said, why? They said, well, today's spring. And we said, what? You know, but it's still cold out. And wouldn't you know it, spring started that day.
Wow.
Like, the weather was that predictable.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, so I think it's just something about Finland's geography, is they could really predict the weather. In the same episode, the topic of why can't you let people just enjoy things came up again. This comes up frequently. And while the topic is kind of exhausting and seems like often stuck on the same points, there's something I haven't personally seen brought up. I, like many others, experienced a lot of bullying about the things I liked when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
This is common. And when people bring this up, it's often countered with, Yeah, but those things are now the most popular things in the world. You won. Which is certainly true for many of the things like superheroes and Japanese comics and whatnot. But one thing I think needs to be pointed out is that bullying often leaves trauma.
Yeah.
Sometimes big, sometimes small, depending on the person and the situation. And that trauma doesn't just disappear by pointing out some statistics and facts. Mm-hmm. So even as adults, people might feel attacked and get anxious when some critics criticize the things they love.
Yeah.
Not because they've made liking things their personality, but because the trauma is still strong and the situation may be triggering. I'm not saying that people should stop criticizing popular things or, quote, yucking others' yums. I certainly shit on things from time to time in my reviews, too. But I do think it matters how we do it, and just keeping those things in mind when actually talking with someone might help.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly is a complicated thing.
Yes.
In other news.
Yes.
It's the last week of my first period of my movie group that I've told you about in my previous letters. This is why I was hoping Oki would update us on this. The group was mostly a ton of fun. Sometimes I forgot my points during the presentation, but that's not a big deal because I don't get paid for it. And the attendance was low. Usually only two or three people came, but the conversations were really nice and people liked the films I chose. So I probably will do it again in the next period. Oh,
good. Yeah, keep glad to hear it. That sounds nice.
If it's rewarding, please continue. Yeah. Currently, I'm thinking of showing in order Taxi Driver, Rocky, Star Wars, and Superman. Just because I feel like watching them and I feel like it creates a fun journey from a really dark movie to a really light one. Taxi Driver to Superman.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And yes, these are super popular movies, but the people at the Culture Workshop aren't necessarily big movie fans at all, and you never know who's missed what.
Well, it's always a good idea to remind people of like movies, because sometimes they're movies you heard of, but these are movies from the 1970s, and the younger you are, the less likely you are to run into them casually.
And we were just about how some things just aren't on streaming, and
so
people aren't going to necessarily stumble across something that's even really popular, something like Wild at Heart.
Well, people just don't stumble across hardly anything anymore. You usually find something because you're looking for it. So having an opportunity to make a point of seeing some of these classic films from the 1970s is a good thing, I think. So, yeah. I mean, some people have seen them, some people won't. Mm. Either way, it sounds like you're going to have a good crowd. Those are excellent films.
It says, you'll never know what who missed what. And, you know, it's my group. I don't get paid, and this is what I'm feeling currently. It might change when it's time to actually make the decisions.
Mm-hmm.
After all that, thank you for constantly doing such amazing podcasts. You constantly make me think more critically of films and the culture around them. And you're both funny and good-looking, too. William.
That's not good. No.
Good luck with the Schmodown this year, too.
Thank you.
I always watch the show on Saturday mornings together with my best friend, and we're both excited to see where you'll end up this year.
Thank you.
Start has certainly been promising for you both. Have a ton of fun. With love and respect. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Regarding what you were talking about in terms of the let people enjoy things thing and how some people were indeed treated poorly for the things that they liked as a kid. I've been one of those. I'm sure a lot of people can identify that with that on one level or another. And if there's one thing I know, it's whatever the reason, yes, bullying leaves scars. Mm. Doesn't matter what you were bullied about. It matters, but like it's regardless of what you were bullied about, it leaves scars. Especially if you have to endure it over a long period of time. It trains your brain to work in a certain way. I deal with this a lot, actually. I have various, what you would call, intrusive thoughts that are basically, no one's bullying me right now. I'd better treat myself like crap and tell myself I'm horrible in some way.
Your brain got so used to it that now you do it yourself.
Yeah, it's a pattern. It's something that it releases like chemicals into your brain that like anxiety is like this as well. Mm-hmm. If you live with anxiety enough, especially when you're a child, your brain just gets used to pumping out those anxiety chemicals. And then even if you have nothing to be anxious about.
It's almost like an addiction in a lot of
ways. Yeah, it is, actually.
Depression.
Yeah, my therapist has described it that way.
Likes to feed itself.
Yeah,
it's really an insidious thing.
Yeah, and again, if you have nothing to be anxious about, your brain still wants to release those chemicals, so find something, and it can be really, really difficult. Not everyone shares this experience, but I bet there's quite a few who do. Regarding that, however, and my one counter to that, because yes, that is reasonable. And a lot of people, especially on social media, they're not treating social media as, you know, a serious publication. They're treating it as almost like an online diary or something where they can sort of respond very naturally to things and not necessarily think about the great long-term consequences of everything that they say, because they're not trying to be writers or trying to be in the public eye necessarily. They're just venting on the internet.
Or they don't even care who reads it.
Yeah.
Just sort of casually.
Whether they're young or they don't put any value in it, I get it. But here's the thing I think we need to be cognizant of, though, even with that being said. Bullying is a behavior that can create cycles if we're not careful. And it is easy in certain circumstances for people who have been bullied to take on bullying forms of behavior in certain contexts if they're not careful. And that's something that we need to be careful of. And when we say things like, hey, the thing that you enjoy, and this is not true for everybody. There's a lot of things people enjoy that are not the most popular thing in the world right now that they might have gotten bullied for. But if you were bullied for maybe, say, liking Marvel Comics, that's the most popular thing in the world right now. And I get that you might still be protective of it. It might still be sort of, there might be some really traumatic memories attached to it. But you also don't want to wield that like a club. You know, you don't want to beat down people who just aren't into that, because that just creates a cycle in which there will be resentments that will return in future generations.
I think we have to
at some point try to handle these things as maturely as we can.
I think this goes back to what I was saying about those early days of internet criticism, because that was about the time when sort of nerd culture began to sort of form in earnest.
And it happened to coincide with like this big industry-wide shift towards taking things like superhero movies seriously. Star Wars had come back.
Putting a lot more money into that.
Star Wars had come back. The Matrix had changed a lot of things. So makes sense.
So all of that stuff became popular again, but a lot of the people who were early boosters of that were the people who had been picked on and bullied for liking that. So when they sort of moved into the main discourse, those same people went in with a chip on their shoulder.
Yeah.
They said, this stuff is actually really good. Now you're part of this. This was mine. I knew it all along.
Mm-hmm.
How, you know, come at me. Come at me now. Now that it's popular. And
that's not universal, but I've definitely seen that.
Now 20 years have passed. A whole generation has gone by. So liking Marvel stuff is something...
A fifth of a century has gone by, for God's sake.
Yeah, well, that first Iron Man movie came out in 2008.
Yeah, if we go from Blade, it's been a quarter of a century.
Yeah, people who were born the year... Iron Man came out or in junior high school now. So it's a whole lifetime now has gone by with this stuff being popular.
You were born when Spider-Man came out. Mm. You can drink.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's weird, right?
not yet. Cause that was
very close.
Was 20 years ago. But,
very close.
You're almost old enough to drink.
I'm sorry. I was thinking about when Spider-Man was supposed to come out. Not when it actually came out. Cause it got pushed back. Cause of the whole 9/11 thing. But anyway.
But that chip on the shoulder are now coming from people who were growing up when that stuff was already popular.
Yeah, it's
liking
not the
Marvel
same
Comics was not hip for some of these people.
Yeah, so it makes you question like
where is that antagonism coming from? I think the antagonism
was coming from the discourse that they were exposed to when they were younger.
Yeah.
About how this is how you should feel about these things, but like you haven't necessarily.
So that's
not necessarily the shared experience now.
Sort of like this massive shared crucible of surviving bullying is kind of codified nerd culture for a long time.
Yeah.
It was the safe space people could go to.
Yeah,
you could gather online, find other people who like that stuff, and really thrive and find a place where you can be comfortable with other fellow enthusiasts.
And now, again, everyone's experience is different, and even though this is considered mainstream popular, there may be situations in which you particularly grew up in maybe a certain family or a certain community where you were still ostracized for one reason or another, or maybe you experienced this with different forms of media or different interests or different subject groups in school or whatever. But regardless, I think the point is made though. We've all got to be a little bit more sensitive. And so let's not necessarily say, oh, we have to let everyone enjoy everything. But we need to remember that everyone's a person and we need to live with empathy.
Yeah.
So that's all. We can't lose our empathy when we get, you know,
but at the same time, we're allowed to hate what we hate. And,
within reason. I mean, you're allowed to hate art. I hate Transformers. I don't think you're allowed to, you know, there's certain things.
I don't hate a person for loving Transformers, though. I just hate Transformers.
Yeah, yeah. I'm saying that's the line for me. I think that would be inappropriate.
The worst I'll say about somebody is, well, okay, maybe you don't have the best taste. That's, you know, that's the worst I can say about a person.
We're allowed to disagree on
that. And having bad taste doesn't make you a bad person by any means.
No, in fact, a lot of people might think your taste is perfect, so who cares? It's just a matter of that's what taste is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's very personal. My taste buds are weird. I don't like it when chocolate and peanut butter are together in things. I think that's awful.
I'm not a fan of that combination. I don't like peanut butter with anything. Peanut butter is fine by itself.
I like peanut butter by itself. We're with bread. obviously well, bread, like on bread, bread but crackers, yeah. etc., vegetables maybe. But like once you like, and
once you start putting a sweet thing on it, like chocolate or jelly,
jelly, I'm fine with because jelly I kind of grew up with. But generally speaking, I totally agree with you. So yeah, it's all a matter. That's what taste is. It's supposed to be really distinctly personal.
So yeah, yeah, your personal taste is your personal taste, and yeah. You know,
if we disagree, fine. We can have a mild joshing about it. I hope, but like you know, that's
sniff
it.
At quote people that mm-hmm. is groups of abstract groups of people for yeah. liking a popular thing, but individuals, I'm not going to get on anybody's case.
Anyway, that is it for We've Got Mail this week. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, everybody, for writing in. Wonderful crop of questions this week. Of course, our email address is letters@criticallyacclaimed.net. If you would care to email us with your own questions, concerns, corrections, we love getting corrections. That's how we grow. Please let us know. Again, letters@criticallyacclaimed.net. If you prefer to send us a letter or something else in the mail, it's always appreciated, and we always make sure we read those. Whitney, what is our P.O. box?
Yeah, send us a physical letter. P.O. Box 641565, Los Angeles, California, 90064.
You can also find us on Twitter at Critic Acclaim. I am at William Bibbiani.
I'm at Whitney Seibold.
If you want more Bibbs and Whitney, we've got, and I realize, again, it's kind of a slow week for our podcast on the main channel. We still have a ton of exclusive shows on our Patreon, patreon.com/criticallyacclaimednetwork. Whole seasons of Star Trek. We've reviewed every single Star Trek per episode and or movie. And we're up to the second season of Next Generation right now. So there's a ton there. We've reviewed all of Firefly. We've reviewed all of the 1960s Batman. We're going to be doing some addendums to that, so stick around. We've got commentary tracks. A ton of stuff. Patreon.com/criticallyacclaimednetwork. Thank you to every single one of our patrons. Without you, we wouldn't exist. And that means the whole world to us. And I think that's it.
That's it.
So thank you, everybody, once again for listening. Thank you. We hope you have a wonderful weekend. And yeah, we'll be back and hopefully back on track next week. Life is hard, but we have each other. And that's why I love this podcast. So
long as we got each other.
Something.
Silver spoons and family and ties.
Growing pains are... Rhoda.
Thank you for being Give Me a Break.
Saint elsewhere was 21 Jumpin' Street. All up in the goodbye.
Together riding a tiny train.